This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Wendy Mockey. Today we're joined by Kathy Martin, an educator, cultural advocate, and a storyteller from the Federated States of Micronesia. Kathy grew up in Chuuk, trained as a teacher, and now works across the Pacific supporting Micronesian students and communities through education. Whether she's developing culturally responsive curriculum, interpreting for families, or stepping onto the stage to tell stories of identity and resilience, Kathy's work is grounded in care and connection. She's here to remind us there is nothing micro about Micronesia. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you, Miss Wendy.
Now, Kathy, you were born and raised in Chuuk, surrounded by ocean, community and culture. I'm wondering, what was your childhood like growing up in Chuuk?
Okay, well, the name Peace Battle, and that's where I grew up with my family, and it's a small island. You have to take the boat to ride from this island to the main island in Chuuk to go to school, but stayed for the whole year. Sometimes during the weekends, we go back to the island to spend the weekends, and then we go back to the main island for school. And that's the life that I experienced, going on the boat a lot. And I remember, you know, feeling seasick when you're on the boat and you threw up. And it's about maybe 45 minutes to 1 hour riding on a boat from my island to the main island. And when the water is rough, I experience rough wave in the rain, still on the boat. And we got wet throughout the whole journey on the boat from one island to another island. So you travel on boat to go to different islands. So that experience resonated with me. I like going on the boat. Growing up, and I mean, now I'm an adult, I don't really get seasick on the boat anymore, but I got air sick when I travel on plane.
Oh my gosh. It was just motion sickness in general then, I think.
Well, exactly, but not anymore on the boat. The last time I was on the island, January this year, I was back home. And I have fun, you know, because I was always thinking about what's going on the island.
Oh my gosh. It's so fascinating hearing about you. And it's very common on the islands. We see the ocean as our highways, and that's how a lot of us travel from one island to the next. And so I'm wondering, are you able to describe a moment from your early years that helped shape the person you are now?
Ooh, I would say that I always follow the mothers. It's mostly not only my biological mom, but her sisters, her cousins, and then my grandma. I followed her most of her time, especially during summertime. Then I will go back to our island, stay over the summertime with her, and I will always follow her to fishing. Like, as a mother or females, they go fishing on shore. They don't go off the reef, but on the reef. So following her, sometimes I would say, oh my gosh, this is so tiring, but they would stay in the water all day. Well, fun for me because I go swim. But, you know, the part is, she's fishing while I swim around, but you know, I'm supposed to help her carry the weaving basket that she has. But most of the time, these females, they have the basket, they tie it up around their waist, and that's how they carry it. But then me just swimming around her just to accompany her. So I think that's part of it bringing me to today, where I have to be more patient. I have to work long hours, stay in one area for length of time. So yeah, it's the mothers that I follow them around.
And mothers in our communities play such a vital role, and they're so important. And what role did tradition play in your family growing up?
As a female, and in the culture, there's a lot of gender roles. Because gender roles, when you look at them and weigh them, they're almost the same amount of what men have as roles. So that's why gender roles is also important, because the roles that women cannot do and the roles that men cannot do. So my role as a female is mostly caring for family. Whenever someone is sick, is be there for them, caring for the children. Not only my children, but could be my siblings' children, my cousins, is always looking out for children. On the island, there's no such thing as like, oh, that's not my child, I'll not talk to them, right? Whenever you see some child is going to do some trouble as a parent, and you see a child, always talk to the child, whether they're doing bad things or not. Just say, hey, what you doing all the while? Sometimes to me, that's the most important thing, because we say that, oh, that's not my child. But on the island, whether it's your child or not your child, you still have to look out for them.
Yeah. It's that saying, it takes a village. We do that in a very literal sense. Every child is everyone's responsibility, and we raise our children together. And children are so important to us in that way. Now, you became a teacher and returned to your high school, standing in the same classrooms you once sat in. But your path in education didn't stop there. I want to know, what inspired you initially to become a teacher?
Very good question. Well, I would really say that I think also people had seen me in that mode as to be a teacher, and they offered me the position of being a teacher, and they probably have confidence in me that I can do it. And so when I started teaching, I also realized that teaching the youth is very important in always not only teaching them, but like talking stories with them. And so sometimes you think about some stories that they may never heard about it, and you share those stories, and that would inspire them maybe. And I remember that I shared a lot of my personal journey when I was in college. So I shared with my students just to bring them to a different perspectives, where this is not the only place you will see education, but you can also see it in different areas. So those stories, they're personal, but it's more about what is a college journey looks like. And that kind of like even bringing me to where I realized that I really like to talk to youths. Mostly, maybe I don't know, I'm not good at science, but telling them about the ocean, that's part of science, right?
Yeah.
And maybe I'm not good at math, but talking to them about weaving, that's math. Because you need to know how many palm leaves you need to make sure you weave it to have a basket. So that you relate to them, not only in the textbook, but you take them outside of the textbook, where my teaching position was like, oh, all right, we're going to do a field trip. So you need to look at the ocean and the shoreline and think about what's going to happen 10 years from today, because climate change is in your backyard or in your shoreline. So something like that.
Oh, that's so incredible, because I fully agree with you in terms of education can look and appear differently than what is your traditional standard of a classroom environment and how we sort of teach maths and English. And so being able to apply that to something that they can understand and process and see it through that lens can really be transformative for young people.
Sure. Yes.
And I'm curious, because I don't know how I would handle it, but what was it like teaching at the high school you graduated from?
I have a great time, because that high school that I graduated, activities where we're not only sitting in the classroom, but we went out and clean up our island. We went out and go to the hospital to visit the sick. We went out and go to the prison to visit the prisoners. So things like that happened at the school, not only learning in the classroom, but we do community work. And so going back there and teaching, it was like, yeah, this is what I dreamt about that I want to continue sharing with the new generation, the new students that are attending the school.
Oh, I love that. That's so special and so wonderful to hear how amazing that being able to grow up, to come through that school and then feeling like it's so community focused that I can understand why it feels so wonderful to go back and be able to teach there and kind of see and reflect on your own journey, I guess, at the same time. Now, later you moved into education support with Pacific Resources for Education and Learning. What motivated that shift?
When I was in high school, I heard about this organization, Pacific Resources for Education and Learning. And I said, wow, they must have done great work in the Pacific, because I've seen them, I've heard about them, I've seen books that they in top list, books on the different islands, maybe not specifically to my island, but other islands in Micronesia. And then they also have like books on our alphabet from our languages, the different languages, and even published stories that storytellers from each island and then will translate it into English, and they will have both English and that native language. And plus they're focusing on education, learning. It's always learning. So that's where it really inspired me to look forward to this job. I kept saying, I really like them. I want to work with them.
Oh, wow. And now, so with the experience that you've had, how do you help schools become safer to create more culturally aware spaces for Micronesian kids?
So now we have what they call community schools here in Hawaii, but it's not separated from DOE or from the school. It's only a program that they established for the schools. So we hired another person to be in the school to connect the students and families to resources and services that they need. So let's say a student needs healthcare and that student does not have any. So the person that we hired will look around and say, okay, I'm going to connect your family to this healthcare program so they can sign you up. So those are part of that community. And we want it to be more part of it cultural, where, you know, the person that we hire can speak the language and can also find people that speak other languages that maybe that individual could not speak it, and be able to connect to different individuals or services that they provide that language service. So that way there's a cultural connection. And that's one of the things that we wanted to be safe. What is that safe environment for our community, not only our students, but also the families, the parents. Sometimes the parents doesn't know where to go.
Now, your work now takes you across Guam, Saipan, the Marshall Islands and beyond, supporting teachers and schools and understanding how to best work with Micronesian students. What are some of the biggest challenges Micronesian students face in the classroom?
Of course, there is the language barriers for especially those that are not born and raised in the United States. But there is also challenges with home, where maybe families are crowded in a house and maybe there is not enough space for the children to do their school studies at home. Maybe there is not enough time for them to sit down and do their homework, because sometimes parents are away working. Some of our parents are also doing not only one job, but maybe multiple jobs just to stay survive in the United States. And so the struggle is not only inside the school itself, but it also ended up with our parents not being home to help their kids. But if their kids are coming home with their homework, parents may not be able to help them at home because they don't speak English or they don't know how to read. So those are challenges that our students may face. Sometimes we heard from teachers that students have chronic absenteeism. And we're And that I understand. Many teachers are frustrated, and I'm not blaming them for being frustrated, but we're trying to help on how to meet both teachers and families so they can meet each other in the middle to help each other out, not only helping the family, but also helping the teachers. So that way the teachers can be able to fully teaching the kid or the student without facing obstacles because the child is not at school. So we're working on that. And like at the moment at my job, we're doing a survey, a study on how to help families that have children, students that are facing chronic absenteeism.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific with me, Wendy Mockey, here on ABC Radio Australia. And my guest today is Kathy Martin. Now, let's pivot a little bit. You never planned on becoming an actor, but when the theatre came calling, something in you sparked. It was during a workshop with Masters of the Currents that you found a new way to tell stories, and not just yours, but those of an entire community. What was it like stepping into a theatre workshop for the first time?
It was kind of like, nerve-wracking where you're like, oh my gosh, a workshop. Throughout my whole career, there's workshop everywhere, right? So I'm like, oh, another workshop, but not understanding the thesis theater, right? So when I did the workshop with the theater, I was like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. Especially when we did they call it flocking. Birds, you know how the birds are flocking? You follow the person in front of you, whatever motion they're doing and gesture they're doing, you follow them. And that person in front of you was doing the storytelling while doing the movement. And I was like, I found that really beautiful. And I found myself really fall into it. When I was doing a story and everybody was following me, and that story that I was telling was like, come home, because many of our people had longing to go home, but it's hard for them to go back because they find it very expensive to return home. And again, they're working hard where they will say, we're going to save up for this, but then there's something happened, then they can't. So that was what I found in that workshop that made me drawn into that. And then here I am.
And do you remember the moment they asked you to be in the play?
I do. I remember the moment. First was when, after that workshop, the director of theater production was saying, you're a normal actor. You should consider doing acting. And I said, oh, well, I'm not sure. I'm just here for the workshop. But then they came to Hawaii. It's the same time that I also moved back to Hawaii. And then I also went to the last workshop. And I just started telling them that, seriously, the last workshop, I made a commitment because I want to show myself that I really appreciate what they're doing for the community. And so I went to that workshop. And then after that workshop, another person who was helping with the workshop came to me and said, I think you should consider being an acting. And I said, oh, I think I'm too busy, but I'll think about it. One day there's email going out to people that went to the workshops. And so I looked at it. I said, okay, I will come to the tryouts. They call it tryout. So the tryouts, we traveled to Hawaii, the Big Island. And that's where we did the tryout. And after that, they're like, oh, you are really good. I'm like, okay, maybe. Okay, I'll do it.
So we'll maybe see. There's something there.
Yeah.
I think you're obviously a natural born performer and storyteller. What did being part of Nothing Micro About Micronesia mean to you?
Positively overwhelmed, right? Where I never thought it would come to this point where people will really give just left to right positive reactions. So what really meant to me is that something that people are taking the story with them and they are relating to the stories and they are learning from something from it, and that they are sharing with others, and not only our own community, but others that are from outside of our community. They were just impressed that they had seen it, and they were like, it was a great show. People need to see it. Something that need to, that they really need to see it. I have a friend was sharing with me that she brought a niece with her on Guam. And I think I would not forget this, because this niece of hers is only probably 8 or 9 years old. And this niece was saying, this is the best time of my life.
Oh, I love that.
My friend was like, oh, really? And she said, yes, this is the best time of my life. And to me, hearing that from an elementary, that means that this play is not only talking to high school, but it can talk to even the little ones. But just think about how this girl was born and raised away outside of Chuuk. And yet, she had that message. She received that message. And for her to say that is just a blown mind for me,
That's so incredible. And it only speaks to the power of storytelling and how that connection can go beyond age or any of those barriers, and speaking to like older people and younger people, and the importance of feeling seen and represented. Why do you think storytelling is such a powerful tool for healing and connection?
Well, because it's real. These are real stories. They're not made up, but they are touching on points where people are sharing what happened to them, or people are sharing what was going on back in the days or back in the island, or what was the home island look like. And so that's why storytelling is powerful, because we see ourselves in those stories. And when we hear these stories, it makes us connect to where we come from. And these kids that they are watching the show, they start to understand where they come from. And then that's where they appreciate who they are. Not only that they need to be proud of who they are, but they need to appreciate it. Because appreciating is more to show respect versus being proud. It can be out of control. And when we did the play and this crew, high school came and saw the play, they were ecstatic. They were just like, wow. They couldn't stop clapping, cheering. And so I have to remind them, I said, be proud, but in a very respectful way. Don't just say you are proud and then you're going to start do things viral. I am this, I am that, but you have to be proud in a respectful way, showing people that you are from an island that has values, things like that. So that's why storytelling is very important.
Kathy, what gives you hope for the future of your region and your people?
Really hope that they pass the level of feeling discriminated or always taking comments that they are targeted. Let's say they hear something and they can say, oh, I already passed that. That's not targeting me. I want them to step away from that. And I've shared with a friend, because just this travel, because I traveled so many times on United, that on United, you can move up your level. So when you move up, you will upgrade to first class, business class. So on this trip, coming out from Saipan to Guam, we were at the airport and I heard my name paged to get to the counter. So I went up to the counter, I presented my ID. But then the staff said, "What? What's up?" And so I just smiled and I said, "Oh, you paged me." Because I already knew why they paged me. Because I need to upgrade to business class. And she said, "Oh," she jumped. She looked at my ID and then she went on her system and looked and saw my name and said, "Oh, you want to upgrade?" And I said, "I guess that's why you paged me, right?" So that, "Oh, okay." So putting on, but since to me already paged that or getting that comments. And I guess because, again, in Hawaii, when we were wearing our skirts, they call it Micronesian skirts, we already targeted. So instead of reacting to her comments, or I just said, "Oh, you know," positively smile. Yeah. So that's what I'm hoping that will happen to the young ones, the community, not to always take things that is targeting you, but you can pass that level, move on, let it go, so you can help others, but you can respond to whoever is saying whatever things to you, can respond to them in a very positive way and in a friendly way, in a kind way. That way they can also change.
Thank you, Kathy. Now, this is our last question. If there was one thing about your culture that you wish more people around the world understood or celebrated, what would it be?
Well, I think I've shared something about personally where I come from, and we were known as people that we, with our food, right? But in our culture, we have the bonded bread food that will be put into coconut milk.
Yum already.
It is very yummy, and I love that. I mean, when it's fresh, you can really taste the freshness of the breadfruit and the coconut milk. So men, that's part of their, like, showing that they are men. In bonding the breadfruit, it has to be very firm, and then mix it with the coconut milk, and it makes it really delicious. So something we want to celebrate, making breadfruit in coconut milk.
And does it have do you have a name for this particular breadfruit with coconut
bonded,
milk?
Yeah. Yes. It's Martin. Martin.
Martin.
Yes.
Oh, I feel like some Martin right now after hearing what's involved to make it. Anything with coconut milk is a winner for me.
It is. When you have a fresh coconut milk, it's yummy. It
changes the game. And you just put fresh coconut milk and it just elevates whatever it is.
Yes.
Kathy, thank you for joining us on Stories from the Pacific and for sharing your journey with such grace and such generosity. Your story is a powerful reminder that leadership comes in many forms. Sometimes it's standing in front of a classroom. Sometimes it's helping a child feel seen. And sometimes it's simply showing up with love, culture, and care. You've shown us that there is truly nothing micro about Micronesia, not in its people, not in its stories, and certainly not in its heart. Thank you for the work you do, the wisdom you carry, and the legacy you continue to hold. Thank you.
My pleasure, Wendy. And to the team of our Pacific Stories, I really thank you. And Kiri So from our team.
You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific, presented by me, Wendy Mocky, and produced by Jaden Mailata. If you like this episode and want more, be sure to listen to other episodes in our program by searching up Stories from the Pacific on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. This story was produced on the lands of the Yagara and Turrbal people.